Good morning, Calvary. My name is Mike Martin. I'm involved in the men's Monday night Bible studies. Today's passage is John 10, 1 through 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. Anyone who enters by me, he will be saved and go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." The word of the Lord.
Hey, how was your Christmas? Was it a time of rest and relaxation, a chance to recharge, to step away from some of your striving, your activities, your calendar? Was it a moment that is just full of sweet memories with your family? Was it a time that left you feeling full? Not merely because of calorie intake, hopefully that was there as well, but left you feeling like you had exactly what it was that you needed. That's been my genuine prayer for all of you in this season. Now, I know that for such a lofty goal as those, it might not have lived up to all of those expectations. That we might have walked away and it felt rushed, it felt too short, or it was too full of things, and so we didn't get that downtime within it. It just didn't live up to what we wanted it to be. So for many people, those who had great Christmases and those who still wish they were there, I'm praying still that you're able to find what you need in this season. As all of us seem to be rushing back to what our routines are, going back to what our regular rhythms are, it feels like Christmas is just getting rushed past. And so as a way to help you to feel more at ease in that, we left all of our Christmas decorations up. So it did not feel that we were just blitzing past Christmas. Has nothing to do with the fact that the office was closed this week and there was no one to take them all down. It has nothing to do with that. But maybe them still being up will help to ease things just a little bit, because we too are going back to our routines. We too are going back to a regular rhythm that we had. In the fall, we were working through the Gospel of John together, and we took a pause at Advent, at Christmas, to look at the significance of Jesus coming and his return. And now, we are going right back to the Gospel of John, picking it up on the very next page after we left off. And yet, what I think is special, what's significant, what matters in how the schedule has worked out is that this passage that we're in today is so pertinent for the start of a new year. Speaks right into the very hearts of where we might be. For those who miss Christmas and those who feel like they missed Christmas, it speaks to the very place that we find ourselves. Now, to get into that, we should probably look at what was going on in the Gospel of John. Now, as a reminder, we've been focusing on this idea that John writes the whole thing. John writes this gospel so that you would know who Jesus is, and we titled the series this, have life in his name. That by knowing who this Jesus is, what he's done, what he's been teaching, these signs he's doing, we are able to see who Jesus is himself and have life, salvation, being brought into the family of God through him. Knowing Jesus is so important to John that he wants to waste no time. He tells from the very first page of his gospel who this Jesus is. This was back in John 1, starting in verse 11. It said he, talking about Jesus, came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. John tells us right from the very, very beginning who this Jesus is, and we can have life in his name. And so he tells these stories of the miracles of Jesus. He shows the teaching of Jesus. He shows the character of Jesus, all of it, so that we would know him and have life because of him. Now, in the story, not everyone has been responding in the way that John hopes we would. And in fact, he captures that here. Jesus comes to his own people, the Jewish people, and many of them did not receive him. We've been seeing that in the Gospel of John, most clearly in the religious leaders of the time. We left off, and the religious leaders and Jesus were having lots of disagreements. For one, it related to the claims of Jesus, and the religious leaders did not like those. One in particular, he claimed to be God, and the Jewish leaders had a hard time with that. Or it could be the way that Jesus was doing things. It seems to fall short of the traditions and expectations that the leaders had for someone like Jesus. And then most recently, we've been seeing that Jesus and these Jewish religious leaders are not seeing eye to eye, because the leaders actually see him as a threat to their authority, to their position, to their status in the culture. And so all of it has been boiling up to this point, to the very point that we saw in John chapter 9, which I'm more than happy to remind us of, though I'm sure that we remember exactly what we talked about there. So John chapter 9 is this incredible story where Jesus heals this man who was born blind. But rather than it being this time of celebration, of excitement, of amazement at the work that God was doing, well, this man gets hauled in front of the Jewish leaders, the religious leaders, and interrogated, scolded, trying to poke holes in the story, trying to show that Jesus was not good because of what he's done, because it did not line up with what they were expecting. It gets to the point, it devolves to the point to where they actually kick this man out of the synagogue, unable to worship God, missing the work that God had done in his life. See, while this man started blind by seeing Jesus, he had life. And these Jewish religious leaders, they missed it. They were blind to the work that Jesus was doing. And unfortunately, this comes in a long line of these Jewish leaders failing to point people back to God, failing to see what God was doing. We talked about this quite a bit during our Advent series. We were looking at the promise of these kings and how it was a marked contrast with the actual kings that Israel had. They were not leading the people in the way that they needed to. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't just the kings who led this way. But the Jewish leaders, during the same time, they were leading people astray. But in the midst of that, God makes an incredible promise in Ezekiel 34. It's one of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible. It speaks of these Jewish religious leaders as these shepherds who are meant to care for God's flock, to care for God's people. But rather than doing that, they've been feasting on the flock instead. They've been losing sheep. They've been caring more about their reputation, more about their name and their status, to the detriment of God's people. All throughout this passage, God's people are referred to as sheep, as this flock, as beings that need near constant care and guidance and protection and love. And we might be wondering, why do I love this chapter so much? None of it sounds particularly good so far. The horror of how these religious leaders have been leading so poorly. The fact that God's people are called sheep, which doesn't quite feel so good. And then the fact that I have a memory, a very vivid memory of when I was in Bible school, reading through this passage in a class and just being mortified. This is what's possible when God's people lead poorly. This is what happens when the religious leaders don't do what they're supposed to do. And I'm training to be a religious leader of a sense. And I was crippled by fear. But what makes this passage so good, so beautiful, is what God will go on to say. In that context where the people were not being led the way that they need to, God says, I will do it. I will come to be the shepherd of my sheep. I myself will come and tend to them, to give them rest, to feed them, to gather up the lost, to bind up the injured, to strengthen the weak. I myself, that's the emphasis all throughout this passage, over and over again. It's God saying, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will be the shepherd for my sheep. I will give them what they need. And it's in that context that Jesus speaks to these religious leaders, the same ones who were part of John chapter 9, the same ones who are blind to the work of God. Now they're in front of Jesus, and he is explaining to them that I am the shepherd that you failed to be. I have come to lead the people well. And the religious leaders don't get it. They still don't understand what Jesus is doing. We see that in verse 6. And so Jesus uses these illustrations called figures of speech in that passage to explain what it was that he was doing. He first says, I am the door. I am the access point to God. That through me, you find salvation. You find protection from God. You are brought into his family. That whoever enters through Jesus, and only through Jesus, there's no other way. Whoever enters through Jesus, they're part of God's people, and no one can take them away from him. That's the first illustration. Jesus is the door. Then he gives a second one, where these leaders in front of him who failed to see what God was doing with the blind man, as part of a long line of these Jewish religious leaders who have missed the work that God was doing, as part of this history of these bad shepherds, Jesus instead arrives as, well, let's let him explain it for us. This is John 11, or John 10, starting in verse 11. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, well, sees a wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. The wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Jesus says, unlike these leaders who are here, I am the good shepherd. Now, obviously, that begs a question. Why is he a good shepherd? What is it that makes him different from these other leaders? How is Jesus a good shepherd? Well, he's a good shepherd because he leads. He leads God's people in the way that they're meant to. That's what the ultimate thing that these religious leaders were missing. They were not leading the people in the way God had called them to do. As part of the fulfillment of Ezekiel 34, to come and lead the people in the way that they needed, as part of the fulfillment of the very character of God, who the psalmist David describes as a shepherd. What he is like is a leader of the people in this way. Jesus comes to lead in the way that God's people need, not just the lands of plenty, not just of provision, but his leadership comes with so much security and peace and stability. We see this in John 10, verse 4. It says, Jesus talked about himself as this gatekeeper, the shepherd, when he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. See, the picture is Jesus not leading from behind, driving his people by force or by fear, but he is out in front, guiding the direction, showing that the way to go is safe, showing that it's certain because he is experiencing it first. He is out in front, and his people follow behind because they know the love and care of this one who's leading them. Which gets to the second way Jesus is a good shepherd, is that he knows his own. Jesus knows his own. We see that in this verse, that they know him so closely as to know his voice. But we pick it up as well in John 10, 14. It says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. See, this is a picture of the compassion, the love that Jesus has for you. Not for some nameless, faceless entity, and not in some impersonal way, some generic love, but the very love that Jesus has for you. It says, I know my own. We often talk about the love of Jesus for the world, and that's right and good. But the way that Jesus loves the world, the way that he loves all, is not this one-size-fits-all love, but it's personal, it's close, it's intimate, that he knows you and loves you, that he knows every detail of who you are, every instance of your life, your best days, your worst moments, your quirks, what it is that makes you laugh, what makes you cry, what makes you do both at the same time so you don't know how to feel, what it is that makes you, you. Jesus knows that. He knows everything about you, and he loves you in a personal, bespoke, tailor-made way. But that's not just it. It doesn't just say he knows his own, but his own know him in the same close, the same intimate way. So close that he describes it as knowing his voice. See, shepherds at this time, then and now, would often gather with other shepherds, with other flocks as well. And they do this for protection, for companionship, but also just sheep tend to follow other sheep naturally. And so they'd gather as different shepherds with multiple flocks, and they'd become to this one big mega flock, which is great. But what happens if just you need to leave or you need to go somewhere else? How do you get your sheep out of this larger flock of sheep? But imagine you have a bunch of cotton balls and you put them out on a table, and I have some and I do the same, then someone else does it, then we mix it all up, and then the task is, can you get your original cotton balls out of here? I mean, and that's with some pretty compliant objects, let alone belligerent animals. But what shepherds would do is they would train their sheep to know their voice. They would have some sort of unique call or song, or almost like a yodel, it sounds like, that they would send out to this, they would cry out to this large gathering of multiple flocks, and it's amazing to see. A steady stream, a single line of sheep starts to emerge from it. His own sheep who follow after him. A different shepherd does their unique call, and same thing happens with them. The sheep know who is their shepherd, and so they follow after him. Jesus says, that is the closeness I have with my people, that they know my voice. I am theirs and they are mine. Know me so closely as to know my voice. Well, what does that actually look like in practice? Well, I think one of the clearest ways that we can see people knowing the voice of Jesus is when they tell their testimony, the story of how they begin to follow Jesus. Almost every single one of them has this exact same moment. No matter the circumstances, no matter the details of the story, they all share a similar moment. This could be someone who is in just the worst place in the world, just abuse and substances or whatever it might look like. They were in the worst possible place in the world to where others, even non-Christians, would look into and say, they seem too far gone. Or for the stories where God's protection, God's provision, God's rescue comes from not allowing them to experience that sort of thing. So no matter the type of story, no matter the details, no matter how dramatic we might call it, they all share the similar moment where it's being said, I was following other voices. I was going in different directions. I was lost. I didn't know where to go. And then that all important phrase, but then they heard it. They heard the call of this good shepherd. Even though they never heard this voice before, they might not even be able to pinpoint it exactly what it was, but they knew, this is the call I've been listening for. This is the one that I've been waiting to hear because I am his. And it's this change of life that happens because they've heard the call of this voice. When we talk about being his, that we are Jesus, that can sound like we're his possession, that he just gets to do with us what he wants, but it's not in that way. Remember the care of Jesus that makes this possible. That when he says that we are his, it's this joining with us, the linking himself with us, the drawing near in such a beautiful, wonderful way. We hear his voice and we begin to follow him. But it's not just that first moment. It's not just that instance that changed our life, but every single day we continue to listen. Every single day we follow him. Every single day we can strengthen and deepen our understanding of who he is as we follow after him. Well, how do we do that? It's the same answer I always got for you. That we know the voice of Jesus by listening to the very words of Jesus. That we can hear his voice, train ourselves in following after him as we grow in closeness to his word. This is the season of Bible reading plans. That for many people, the start of the new year comes with it, the declaration of this year, I'm gonna read the whole Bible in a year, or read whatever portion you're looking to do. This year is gonna be the year that I have a plan and I stick to it. And maybe for some of us, 4 days into the new year, it is another year of saying, I wasn't able to do it. If you have a Bible reading plan that works for you, that's so awesome. Stick with it. But for all of us, I want to give us a little encouragement that the Bible is not something to be accomplished. It is not the type of plan that we come up with, the goal setting that we do where we can mark it off at the end. All right, 365 days of perfection. I did it. That's not what the Bible is for us. It's the place that shows us the very voice of our good shepherd. It's the place that shapes us and guides our entire life, that we want to spend time within it, not to complete it, not to accomplish it, but as we want to spend time with anyone that we cherish and we know cherishes us. In it, we're shaped and guided by the voice of our good shepherd. So it's not too late to begin a Bible reading plan. It's not too late to pick up an unsuccessful Bible reading plan again. But there's just too much to make up for it. No, there's not. Just pick up where you left off. Well, if we do that, I'll never be able to get complete it by the end of the year. You don't need to. That's not the goal of it. We don't want to complete the Bible, but we want to spend time within it. And we will have more time spent with a 30% successful reading Bible plan than a 0% successful reading one. So whatever this looks like, get time into this word. Now, I know one of the big barriers that we might have is the idea of catch-up work, that I missed a day, so now I have to read twice as much the next day. And this becomes all the more hard if we're doing like a Bible in a year plan, because that's four chapters or something like that. I have to read eight chapters today, so we might miss the next one, and then it's 12, and then the next one, it's 16, and then that's just insurmountable. I can't possibly do this. But the Bible is not about having catch-up work for us, but we read it enthusiastically because we are so caught up in the love of Jesus. Where do you start? Where would be a good place for you to begin to hear the voice of our good shepherd? Well, let me recommend to you page one. That would be a great place. And in so doing, we want to be shaped and guided by the love of Jesus who is speaking to us through his word. Spending time to be consistent as much as we can, to read whatever we can that we can stick with it and know that in it, God is speaking to those who are his. If you need a more rigid Bible reading plan, if having something that holds you accountable is helpful, that's awesome. By all means, stick with it. And you can find a variety of reading plans online. Find one that you can actually be consistent with. Just a small suggestion if you are still looking. One of the things that I've done in the past is the number just works out almost exactly to where there are the same number of weekdays, so Monday through Friday, same number of weekdays in a year as there are chapters in the New Testament. Read one chapter of the New Testament, Monday through Friday. And in a passage like that, in an amount like that, this allows you to go slow, to really listen within it. Not to read to accomplish, but to read to be guided. And if you miss a day, nothing is scheduled over the weekend. That's a day to get to it. If you miss multiple days and it feels like it's too much, just pick up where you left off and stick with it anew and afresh. Because we don't want to read to accomplish. We don't want to read to say that merely that we have done it, but we want to turn to our good shepherd who is leading us and guiding us and speaking to us through his voice, through his word. All right, let me get back to the text. Jesus is a good shepherd, third, because he has authority. Jesus has authority. And we see this in verses 17 and 18. It says, "For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." See, Jesus has the authority to do all that he promises, that he offers certainty. He's not just saying these things because they're nice to hear. He's not saying these things to amass a following, but he's saying these things because he can truly do them, because they are true, that he has authority. Unlike these other leaders who can try to doubt him, who can question him, who can try to reject what it is that he's saying to them. Jesus has the authority to do, Jesus has the authority that they do not have, an authority that comes from God. Every promise Jesus makes in this chapter, in John 10, every promise here and elsewhere, he will keep because he has the ability to. He is that fulfillment of Ezekiel 34. He is God himself who has come to shepherd his sheep. He has come to be with his flock. And that gets to the final thing that I have as to how Jesus is a good shepherd. Jesus is a good shepherd because he lays down his life. That we talk about how Jesus is this gate. He is the access point to God. He is how we receive salvation and how we receive being part of the family of God, how we receive this presence that we're always meant to have. Well, the way that we do that, the way that we receive it, the way that we enter through him is because he lays down his life for us. This, more than anything else, is what makes Jesus a good shepherd. And that's emphasized by the fact that he says so about 5 times in this one passage alone. Over and over again, he wants to make it clear, I am laying down my life for the sheep. I am laying down my life for the sheep. I am laying down my life for the sheep. I am laying down my life for the sheep. One more time. I'm laying down my life for the sheep. See, Jesus is different from these other leaders who care more about their own authority, like we saw in John chapter 9, or building themselves up, like we see throughout the Old Testament. Jesus describes these leaders as more like hired hands. They don't care about the sheep. They're not theirs. And without any love for the sheep, without any sort of buy-in, well, at the very first sign of danger, they'll flee. They're not their sheep. Why should they care? Why should they put their life at stake? But that's not the case with Jesus. He is the good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. See, this is why it matters that he leads his people. He's not removed. He's not absent from the struggles that you and I might go through. He's not hiding out in the back just to see how are things going to go. No, he goes before you. He is leading the way. He knows everything that you will go through before you do because he's out in front of you showing the way to go by his leading. This is why it matters that we are his own, that he knows us. We've not been left to our own devices. We've not been left to wander and to wonder in this world, but he has shown us because he knows us. He's joined to us and us to him. This means he knows who we are through and through, knows absolutely everything that we would need, and he gives that to us because he's the only one capable, only one able, only one willing to provide for that, and he does. This is why it matters that he has the authority. He's not just interested in helping, but he actually does do it. He's not just loving, but he demonstrates that love to you. He's not just able to provide salvation, but he's the only possible place to do so, and he does. Jesus is the good shepherd, God himself, who has come to rescue his people by laying down his life for them. Jesus, the good shepherd who knows his own, calls each by their own voice. That is why he goes to the cross. That is why he lays down his life, because of you, knowing you, loving you, knowing what you need. He goes to provide exactly that by going to the cross. By his very last breath, it's as if a whisper of your name, knowing what you needed, knowing what he could do, and doing exactly that for you. That is what makes him a good shepherd. His great love for you so greatly demonstrated that the God of the universe shows his care, his personal, deep, and intimate love for you that he lays down his life for you. He is no hired hand. He's not one to run off at the very first sign of danger, but he endured the worst of humanity to bring about the best for humanity. Jesus is the good shepherd. I asked you at the beginning how your Christmas was, and I do genuinely want to know. But I hope that you don't see it as the only time that if we miss it, if we miss this moment to pause and find recharge and find connection and all these other things that we hope for, that we put pressure on in that season, it's not as though if we missed it, well, too bad. Try again next year. No. Jesus is the good shepherd who has come. He has made all this possible, that what we celebrate at Christmas is an everyday reality for you because he has come. He is your shepherd who can give you rest, genuine rest, that your life contains sweetness, delights because it's spent with him. He gives us exactly what we need because he is our good shepherd, the one who cares for you, who knows his people, who has all authority, laid down his life for you. So because of that, all those words that we hold dear at Christmas, that we talk about, that make us feel happy, that feels good, like, yes, we get to focus on these things here, all those words like peace and hope and love and mercy and joy. Well, every day you have peace and hope and love and mercy and joy because our good shepherd has come to lay down his life for his sheep. It's that very thing that we're going to celebrate together this morning. On the first Sunday of every month, which this is one, we have the opportunity to take communion together. And communion goes back to that night before Jesus laid down his life, before he went to the cross. He was at this meal with his disciples, and he was saying exactly what it was that he was about to do, showing that no one's taken his life from him, like he talked about in John 10. No one is forcing him to do this. He has all authority to do this. And he's doing so because of it being exactly what we need. He took the bread that was at the table and he broke it and said, this is my body that's given for you. I'm going to die. I'm going to lay down my life. I'm going to the cross so that you may have life and have it abundantly. Well, how do we know? How do we know that Jesus keeps his promises? How do we know that we're not waiting for something more, waiting for him to do some work that proves it, that shows us it's real? Where he took the cup that was at the table and he said, this is the proof. Here's the covenant. Here's the promise. It's my blood. You're not waiting for anything else. You're not waiting for a second act of Jesus. He accomplished it all for you in this one moment, going to the cross, laying down his life. That is how we have access to God. That is how we have all that we need. So in a moment, I'll pray for us, and we'll get a chance to pause and reflect, to look anew and afresh as to what Jesus has done for you, to see more clearly his love for you. Not just this broad love, but for you personally. He knows his own. He knows you. But it's also an opportunity for us to confess of those places that we still turn astray. We are, after all, sheep. We want to confess of those things before we come to the table with clear hearts and a clear conscience as people who follow Jesus imperfectly, but we want to confess to him who is our perfection. So in a moment, I'll pray. We'll have that time to pause, then invite you to go to one of our four stations that we'll have. We'll have two in the front and then a shared table in the back that you can access through either of the two double doors there. Once you're there, we'll take of the cracker representing the bread, Jesus' body given for you, and then the cup, the juice that's in there representing the new covenant by Jesus' blood. You could take it as an individual, as family, as friends, as people who just seem friendly enough nearby. And once everyone's had an opportunity, we will continue to worship in song. But first, let me pray for us. Father, we are so grateful to be reminded of something that is not new in this new year. That what we celebrate, what we rally around, what brings us together is what you have already accomplished for us. You have laid down your life. You who show your love, your deep, close love for your people to the point of going to the cross, to the point of giving up your life so that we can have life in you. As we take of communion, we want to do so confessing of those places we still go astray. We want to do so reminding ourselves of what you've done for us with your body, with your blood. That is the basis of our saving. That is the strength that empowers us to live on. That is the certainty that we rest upon to know our future is safe and secure. It's to you and you alone we pray. Amen.